I just love that song for the holidays. Our theme song when it gets close to Christmas and Hanukkah, we're in the midst of, and boy, all Kwanzaa, all the different holidays, we celebrate them all here. The Paul W. Smith Focus Show with the team, which includes at the top of the board, top of the leaderboard, if we were in a golf match, Mike Parsons, our executive producer, Danielle Mason, Rich Luzinski, and Danielle is acting as professor today, and she is helping Dominic Valentini, who is filling in once again, running the controls. Dominic, you feel comfortable? Is it getting better for you as you do this, Dominic?
Oh, yeah, it's going great. Thanks for asking, Paul.
Okay, well, I want it to go well for you. If it goes well for you, it goes well for me. And we certainly will continue to bring you relentless positive radio in view of some of the things that are not so positive that are still out there while you're on your way to making each and every day count. Because you know, as do I, but have to be reminded once in a while, each day is a gift. And QTR, we don't know how much quality time remaining we have. I do want to thank you for choosing to be an important part of the best and brightest audience in all of radio. We appreciate that. If it's your birthday today, happy birthday to you. You celebrate it with my niece, my late brother Mark's wonderful daughter, Lauren Smith Davison, celebrating her birthday today. Happy birthday, Lauren. I love you. I'm sure she can't be hearing this. She's in a meeting with the folks at Lazy Boy, I believe, where she continues to work. That's a very Monroe company, as you probably well know and well remember.
Is the Smith family a dynasty in Monroe? Are you guys like one of the power families?
No.
You got the talk show host. You got an executive at Lazy Boy. Your sister runs a hospital.
Well, now that you put it that way,
yeah.
If we aren't a dynasty, we should be. But I don't think we are. I am in, I believe, I should know this, I think I'm in the Monroe Hall of Fame. See, these are the things I used to depend on Sweet Marie for, because she kept track of everything. Folks, if you're lucky enough to have mom or dad still around, interview them, take notes. Because things happen now that I would depend on my mother or my father, mostly my mother, or even my brother Mark, to tell me, well, how did that go? What happened there? Who was that? What?
Right.
They're gone.
Now, have you ever gotten the key to the city for Monroe?
There is no key to the city in Monroe.
Oh, okay.
No.
Someone took it and never returned it.
Yeah.
It was Custer.
It was one of the former mayors.
Yeah.
Left it in his pocket, left, and it was, no one ever found it again.
It went in the laundry and it was gone.
I hope he got those pants laundered. But I have not received the key to the city. I did receive accolades when I was in Philadelphia. I'm not going to lie. Philadelphia was a love fest. I was only there 6 years. And it was great that at the time, Mayor, he went on to become governor of Pennsylvania.
What year was it?
I don't know. I was there from, I was in New York. From
was it Rizzo?
It was 90 to 96. No, I knew Rizzo. He was a bear of a man. And he would look you in the eye and shake your hand. You couldn't find your hand anymore. It was completely encompassed by his hand.
Was it Wilson Good?
No, I was there when Wilson Good was there, too. It was?
Ed Rendell.
It was Eddie Rendell.
All right.
And Ed Rendell made me a, what did he call it? I got a certificate. I have it somewhere in a box. Everything's somewhere in a box. Something about a Goodwill Ambassador for the city of Philadelphia. That's what it was. An international Goodwill Ambassador, because I traveled around the world, and I always said good things about Philadelphia, and I still do. And I got the key there as well, and as far as I remember, who knows? I don't have a magical key ring anywhere with a bunch of keys to cities on it.
Right, you're racking them up.
In this amount of time I've been in radio, I've been in very few cities. Considering how long I've been in radio, 55, I don't know. I started when I was 15. I'm now 72. Come April 18th, I'll be 73. I don't do math well, so I don't know how many years. It's 50 or over or whatever. I can't remember.
It's closing in on 60, actually.
Well, if I graduated from high school in 71, Monroe Catholic Central High School, back when it was called Monroe Catholic Central, an all-boy high school in Monroe, well, which is why it's called Monroe Catholic Central. Well, that was not good. And then University of Michigan, after transferring from Monroe County Community College, which allowed me to graduate from the University of Michigan in 1975, debt-free, which when I used to speak to students and tell them that, they couldn't believe somebody graduated from college debt-free. But that's how you can do it, my friends, and it's easier today than ever because of the whole community college system and setup. Anyway, couple of things here. We will talk about the news of the day that is still the news of the day, but we're going to talk about some lighter things. For example, this is I am complete. First, Kim sent this to me, then you sent it to me. So I guess we have to talk about Merriam-Webster's 2025 Word of the Year. Now, remember, one of these dictionaries had 6-7, and I said, are you kidding me?
Right.
But this one is slop, and here I thought I knew what slop meant. I was not aware. You know, slop, back in the 1700s, it was like soft mud.
Right.
It meant something of very little value. This is slop. But now, you know what the definition of slop is? Well, you must, because you sent this to me. But
I know it's what it's derived from.
What's it derived from?
The term AI slop, which is becoming more prevalent. Like when you see a video on social media that you know is fake or created by AI, or an image that's created by AI, and you can point out, you know, the telltale signs, like the hands have six fingers. We call that AI slop. So if you see something,
and it says, if you see something, say something.
Yeah.
The definition has since expanded to mean digital content of low quality that is produced usually in quantity by means of artificial intelligence. In other words, you know, absurd videos, weird advertising images, cheesy propaganda, fake news that looks real, junky AI-written digital books. Well, it goes on, but here's the thing. A lot of AI looks very good.
Right.
There is some disgusting AI with one of the greatest interviews of my life. I spent the day with Fred Rogers, Mr. Rogers, in his neighborhood in Pittsburgh, and they've got beloved Fred Rogers saying some of the most vile things he could possibly say that he never said. That's why I know it's not real.
Right.
But it looks real, it sounds real, and it's terrible. And I don't believe there are laws in place yet that are strict enough, strong enough, to punish people who do stuff like that.
Right, because you can get anyone to say anything, and most people can spot it, but other people can't.
Well, and then there's people who are being used in commercials, celebrities we know would never been in, they would not have allowed themselves to be in a commercial like that for these various nefarious products, and there they are. And yet, if those people with all the lawyers and all the money can't stop these things, how can the rest of us?
Right. I mean, the first celebrity was Taylor Swift, and I guess they were posting explicit images of her, and she was famous enough to say, hey, that's not me, but not everyone's that famous. So, you know, they don't have the resources to say, that's not a real picture of me, and it can ruin your reputation.
I'm telling you, there should be severe consequences, and they should go after the people. Now, a lot of times they say, oh, they're in another country. I don't care where they are. They should be tracked down and arrested and not able to do that sort of thing. Well, be that as it may, now I'm going to show up doing a striptease online. So there you are. I just hope if they do that, for me, they're generous, if you understand what I'm saying. Because, you know, well, okay, we better go.
It's not a cold day.
It was cold. I was in the swimming pool. That's from Seinfeld. It is 12:14, and let's not let the train go off the rails. Coming up, professor, chair of the Department of Political Science at Oakland University, Peter Trombor. Trombor, so you stay with us on that. You know, we know the best gift we can give or receive. Think about this. The best gift is the gift of health. Now, how do you do that? How do you give the... Well, let me tell you something. If you would like to enjoy the holidays without taking pills or getting injections for chronic back, neck, or knee pain, you can. Thanks to my friend, Dr. Sol Kogan, and Dr. Sol Kogan's non-surgical, non-invasive, all-natural intra-disc neutrosis treatments at the Nerve and Disc Institute. Well, take Jerry, for example. Jerry had epidurals, nerve blocks, injections for chronic back pain. And after treatment with Dr. Kogan, Jerry says he's, I'll quote him, completely a new man, enjoying a full, joyful life, end of quote. That's from Jerry. The Nerve and Disc Institute has helped thousands of people, like Kim and me, with sciatica, spinal stenosis, neuropathy, bulging degenerative and herniated discs, avoid spine surgery. And by the way, they're now successfully helping people avoid knee replacements with Knee Restore RX, brand new. Knee Restore RX. Now, the first 10 new patients who call now and start either treatment in December at their locations in Farmington, Clinton Township, or Grand Blanc are going to get 60% off your treatment plan. 60% off the whole treatment plan. Please call the Nerve and Disc Institute. See what we're talking about. 586-416-DISC, 586-416-DISC, or 586-416-3472. That's 586-416-3472. Dr. Sol Kogan at the Nerve and Disc Institute. You will be glad you made this call. 1217 at 760 WJR. Well, there's been a lot in the news and a lot behind the news and people talking. There's plenty to talk about, unfortunately. We rely on professor, chair of the Department of Political Science at Oakland University, Professor Peter Trumbore, for some of his insight into what's going on. Apparently, a new poll says that President Trump's approval rating is dropping among the MAGA base as conservatives condemn Trump's post about the death of Rob Reiner. What do you have on this, Professor? Good afternoon. Welcome back.
Hey, Paul. Thanks for having me back.
It's our pleasure.
There is this sort of brewing civil war in the MAGA ranks, and I think this is just fueling some of that discontent. You know, ever since Trump returned to the White House, there has been this sort of jockeying to figure out what's going to happen with his base of supporters once he steps off the scene. And so some of that has been playing itself out really since last year. And now with the defection of Marjorie Taylor Greene, with the increasing sort of weakness of Trump's support, even among his core, I think we're, and of course the jockeying between, you know, J.D. Vance to sort of claim the Talking Points USA mantle and all this sort of stuff. I think this is indicative of the controversies and the competitions that are swirling around underneath, you know, beneath the surface here.
You know, when he came out with his ill-advised reaction, I'm sure there are some people on the stronger side of supporting him that think he can say or do anything he wants, and they say that's why they like him. But most of us were raised to not speak like that of the dead, especially...
Right, of course.
I mean, hours after they're dead, and nobody knows exactly what happened, for him to assign the blame for his political stance was just, it was just a lot. It was too much. I wonder, honestly, if President Trump even remembers that Rob Reiner's wife, who was also killed, Michelle Singer Reiner, mm-hmm. was the photographer, before she married Rob Reiner, was the photographer who shot the original cover photo for President Trump's book, The Art of the Deal. I wonder if he even remembered that as he was saying the things he was saying.
Well, you know, I would be surprised, frankly, if he did. And honestly, I would be surprised if he cared, even if he did remember. I mean, the bottom line is that Donald Trump, throughout his career, has taken every opportunity to strike back at those that he thinks have somehow wronged him or have somehow disparaged him. I mean, this has just been his MO for as long as he has been in the public spotlight, going way back, you know, into his business career. So I don't think it should come as a surprise to any of us that he would react in this way. He has shown us from his first term, you know, through to now, that he simply has no ability, I think, to respond to these kinds of tragedies the way that a normal president would, or even a normal human being, in all honesty. So I think what's more interesting to me is that you're finally seeing some conservatives who are just fed up with that kind of behavior. And I think it doesn't help that the films that Rob Reiner made are, you know, beloved movies, whether we're talking about The Princess Bride or When Harry Met Sally or Stand By Me. These are great, great movies that are loved across the political spectrum. And so to have the president come out and post what he did, I think just shocked everybody's sensibilities, including folks who would ordinarily keep their mouth shut or even stand with the president.
You know, because you mentioned those films, and I meant to have a list in front of me. Maybe before the show is over, I'll give that list. But he made great films, and it's not like he was a filmmaker going after any political stand, really, that I can recall. I mean, When Harry Met Sally. I mean, these movies were just great movies that people loved. And
absolutely.
The other thing that I don't remember happening as much as it seems to be happening now, and certainly in his rage about this, the president, this is not about just the president. I've never liked it when people talk about themselves in the third person.
Yeah.
It's never in my world, somebody who's talking about themselves like they're not talking about themselves in the third person, they've never gotten my attention as a smart or positive person. I've always looked at them askance. And certainly the president did that when he talked about the Trump derangement syndrome and blah, blah, blah. He acted as if he was talking about somebody else, but he was talking about himself.
Yeah. I mean, more and more of his communications, he does that, you know, and this is not something that I think he started doing, you know, years ago. I think this is one of the things that that he has adopted over the last couple of years. And it is weird, right? It is. And I would agree with you. I think that anytime I see that, it's sort of head scratching and it reeks of ego and narcissism and things like that, which a lot of people have criticized the president for displaying those kinds of those traits and behaviors. So, you know, unfortunately, it's not out of keeping with the way that he presents himself these days.
Well, and there are things that he does that we have liked and have support. And there may be arguments that people say, well, you know, if he wasn't like this, he wouldn't do that. And he's done more than any president in the past. And he's done more in this less than a year and blah, 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 blah. But it does. I think it's reaching a boiling point or breaking point. And as is pointed out in this latest poll, there are those people who've been very strong among the MAGA base conservatives. This was like, for some of them, the last straw.
Yeah. Well, you know, Paul, I think one of the things that's going on is that the things that Donald Trump said he was going to really fundamentally address during the campaign are things that just haven't been touched, right? The economy is not what people think it ought to be. Trump dismisses the whole idea of a crisis of affordability as a hoax. You know, when he went to Pennsylvania and gave his sort of rally, he was really dismissive of the economic concerns of his own supporters, right? And, you know, today we got unemployment figures that show that unemployment has risen to its highest point in 4 years. And people aren't blind and they're not stupid, right? If people feel that their economic fortunes are in decline, they act on that. And, you know, Joe Biden got punished by that. And it looks like the Republicans are being punished by that in these off-year elections that we've seen. So to the extent that Donald Trump is unwilling to address these core fundamental issues that his own supporters care about, along with the rest of the country, I think you're going to continue to see a slipping of his support.
Professor and chair of the Department of Political Science at Oakland University, the great Professor Peter Trumbore. Always a pleasure, sir. Happy holidays. Merry Christmas. Happy Hanukkah. Happy Kwanzaa. Whatever you celebrate, we'll celebrate it with you.
Very good. Same to you, Paul.
Thank you, Professor. We continue in Focus at 12:30 on WJR. And enjoying the holidays, as Cameron Mitchell, our friend Cameron Mitchell, would say, Happy Hanukkah. May your menorah shine bright and your home be filled with joy. I'll second that one as well. We continue now on this Tuesday afternoon, December 16th, with Eben Brown. Eben, of course, Fox News correspondent, WJR contributor extraordinaire. All over the story at Brown University, new images released of a person of interest. This is after another person of interest was released. Now they I guess, have another person of interest. A lot of people, is it just me, Eben, or are a lot of people giving Brown a lot of gas and a lot of pressure that they aren't more on top of this?
Well, there is, I think, a growing upset that someone hasn't been caught and or killed yet over this. And that that just kind of goes to show how uneasy it's made everyone, as you can imagine. The person who is now depicted in these photos or video stills is perhaps the same person, in that same first video still, where they just didn't have a very good clear picture. But since then, they have been able to locate other people's cameras where there had been video taken, and they got a little bit better of a picture. It's not that much better because the person is now very obviously wearing a mask and has a beanie hat. So you really don't see much of his face. You can sort of make out his body shape. He's described as stocky. He's apparently about 5'8 tall. And that's pretty much all we have. They're kind of hoping that someone can just sort of spot him, see him as he walks in this video, and maybe that might cause you to think, hey, I know someone like that, and that you would contact police. The person that they did speak to already that was erroneously said in custody, they were interviewing someone, turns out not to be the person that they were looking for. That person is on their merry way, not connected to anything. But the man who did this is out there somewhere, and it's been about 3 days now at this point, and that means he could be anywhere. He could be in Detroit by now.
Yeah. He apparently had, back to what you were saying, Eben Brown, the authorities are pointing out that he had a kind of a distinctive gait and consistent rhythm that might be recognizable to someone close to them. And they've got, what, $50,000 reward being offered for any information leading to an arrest and conviction. And the university is urging anyone who was at Brown's Barris and Holly building, I think is what it's called, the site of the shooting, on Friday or Saturday to help investigators track down the suspect. And people are saying, well, wait a minute, there are cameras everywhere. I mean, there are cameras that are keyed in on cars that run a red light or sit at a parking meter too long. I mean, there are cameras everywhere, but no cameras.
The big shocker here is that we are sort of used to, at this point, being continuously and constantly surveilled by video cameras everywhere we go. But apparently the Brown campus does not have many of them, and or has so few of them that it's to us, it's kind of jarring. It's like, wait a minute. Why don't you have any of those cameras all over the place? And that's a question for the after action report. How do we, addressing security concerns and lack of security measures and things like that. As of right now, the police have to work with what they've got, and what they've got isn't much. They'll admit. Now, if you recall the shooting in New York of the United Healthcare CEO,
right.
It took them a few days at the very least to find Luigi Mangione in another state. But it took a lot of good police work with some very, with very few images to go on.
And people who paid attention enough to see him at the McDonald's and
right.
they, see something, say something, do something.
Or the parents of the man now accused of killing Charlie Kirk recognizing that's their son and turning him in.
Right.
That's the hope here, that they just get one good lucky break. But the fact is that this man is probably now desperate. He's probably looking over his shoulder a lot, or he's been emboldened thinking, hey, I got away with it. What else can I do? And so that makes him even more dangerous. He still has, it is believed anyway, that he still very likely has his weapons. or weathered, whatever he had. You know, if he didn't ditch it somewhere, you know, that they haven't found it yet. But that's what makes things very scary, is that this guy is still out there, and he could be anywhere by now. Like I said, it's been 3 days. You can get anywhere in 3 days.
Yeah, you're, especially when no one's looking for you, or they don't know who they're looking for. You can stand in line freely and get on an airplane, a train, or a bus, or anything.
The man who is now convicted of killing those four students in Idaho, it took them a month to find him, but they found him.
Yeah, I don't doubt they're going to find this guy, but the question the people around there, and I don't blame him for worrying, is he going to strike again? What's going to happen? We don't know if he was going after someone very specifically or just was going into a classroom and starting randomly shooting.
Correct. We don't know that. And whatever police might have learned at this point, they're not sharing. And there may be good reason for that, for keeping things close to the vest. But you're right. We don't know if there was someone who was a specific target or what his motivations would have been, or if this was completely random, which is always a possibility, right?
Yeah,
so, for instance, one of the victims, this young lady, a sophomore from, I think from Alabama, she was also the vice president of the College Republicans. I think her name is Ella Cook.
Ella Cook.
She was killed, and there was an instant reaction of, oh, they're gunning for Republicans, gunning for conservatives on college campuses. We don't know that yet. She might have just been in the room at the time, you know, and unlucky.
Well, it sounded like when the professor or teacher or teaching assistant, whoever it was, that they interviewed, who was there and said he was face-to-face with a guy, the guy just pulled out a gun and just started shooting. It seemed randomly.
It seemed, again.
Seemed,
you know, we don't have a concrete picture of this yet, so to speak. And that's what makes it, you know, when you don't know all of the things you wish you knew, you kind of get uneasy about it. And that's, I think, what is making people so jittery, if that's the word to use.
I think that's a very legitimate word to use, my friend. I think we're, frankly, with what happened in Australia, what happened, all these different things, we're all a little jittery, aren't we? And I think that's okay, Evan.
100% jittery. Yeah.
How could we not be? All right. What do you got planned for the holidays? You all set? You have to work, or are you going to be able to have some time off with the family?
Well, you know, we're lighting our Hanukkah candles, and, you know, we're two nights into it. Tonight's the third night, and, you know, we'll keep going.
So may your menorah shine bright and your home be filled with joy. I learned that one.
Thank you so much, and Merry Christmas.
Cameron Mitchell, which he sent to me, so I just passed it along to you, and
thank
I hope
you.
that is all true for you, Evan. God bless you.
God bless you, too. Thank you so much, Paul.
Evan Brown, Fox News correspondent, WJR contributor extraordinaire, at 12:43 on WJR. Have you ever wondered why health insurance costs seem to keep going up? That's been talked about a lot lately, and I was doing a little research on the team and part of the family at Blue Cross Blue Shield of Michigan for, I don't know, 20, 30 years, because I believe in them so much, and I found some surprising information on the Blue Cross Blue Shield of Michigan's website that's open to you right now. MIBlueDaily.com/affordability. MI, like in Michigan, MIBlueDaily.com/affordability. I'm telling you, I was surprised to learn that the cost Blue Cross pays for prescription drugs rose by a staggering 15% last year. 15%! My goodness, that's five times higher than inflation was at that time. It's no wonder healthcare costs are a concern for so many of us. And concern, indeed, of Tricia Keith. She's the boss, the president, and CEO. She's the leader. And she's all over this. And that's why the entire team and family of Blue Cross Blue Shield of Michigan is working so hard to help all of us better understand the factors driving up healthcare costs, sharing what they're doing as a business to address it and try the best they can to fix it. Because Blue Cross knows that healthcare is personal. They know that healthcare needs to work for everyone. And in healthcare, especially, affordability matters. So we're in this together, really. I encourage you to take a minute and check out MIBlueDaily.com/affordability. and get informed. You'll be glad you did. It truly is eye-opening information that can help all of us better understand the complexities of the healthcare system and its impact on our health insurance costs. Give it a try. MIBlueDaily.com/affordability. We continue in focus. Paul W. Smith at WJR at 1245. Happy birthday to Sherry Templin. You know, we always talk about Ray Ray. Ray Templin, one of our great engineers, making sure we get on the air from all over the place, including from the Golden Tower of the Fisher Building. Well, Ray Templin's beautiful wife, Sherry, is celebrating her birthday today, and I wanted to give a shout out. So if it's your birthday today, happy birthday to you as well. I mentioned earlier my niece, Lauren Smith Davison, and now also I want to mention Sherry Templin celebrating her birthday today. Dr. Chad Oudy, you heard a moment ago on the air. He is the president and CEO of the Detroit Rescue Mission Ministries, and you may know that today is WJR Cares Day. Dr. Oudy, welcome back. It's always a pleasure to speak with the head of the Detroit Rescue Mission Ministries. Nice to have you here, sir.
Thank you for having me, Mr. Smith.
Why don't you... Please call me Paul. Paul. Why don't you? We've known each other long enough. Why don't you tell us, as president and CEO for, gee whiz, almost 20 years, what the Detroit Rescue Mission Ministries are all about?
You know, the Detroit Rescue Mission has been in existence since 1909, so that's 116 years serving the community. We have a variety of programs, so every single day we serve thousands of men, women, children, seniors, and veterans who are facing homelessness, hunger, addiction, or crisis. And as you know, those are not statistics. These are our neighbors, family, and children who simply need help and hope. We are serving every day about 4,500 meals to about 2,500 people every single day.
Incredible. I just want to stop for a second.
Sure.
This is just one of the organizations that's helping people. And look at how many they're helping. Housing up to 2,500 people a day, providing approximately 4,500 meals a day. That's astonishing. But you can't do it without our help.
There is no way. Today is a special day for us. Number one, because, Paul, you are asking your donors and your listeners to donate. And number two, because CARES Day today, we have the opportunity for every dollar donated to be matched with $3.
Whoa.
So today is a great day. It's only today. If we receive the donation today, we can match it. We can match every dollar with the $3. So the dollars goes way farther than any other day of donations.
That is wonderful news. So if somebody calls and makes a dollar donation or $100 or, my God, $1,000, it's matched 3-1. And that really stretches your donation to help so many people. You adopted 2,000 families this year for the annual Adopt-A-Family program.
Yes.
You've got the food drive to keep the pantry stocked. You host a monthly event for women every first Thursday at the DRM shelter on 3rd Street, Midtown, from 2 to 4 p.m., providing food, toiletries, clothing, and more. The amount of work you guys do after being, as you mentioned earlier, founded in 1909 is mind-blowing. It's just fabulous, Doctor.
Yes. And, you know, I just want to say what makes us unique as an organization is we just don't meet the emergency needs. We restore dignity and help people rebuild their lives. We provide warm meals, safe shelter, addiction recovery, housing for veterans, support for returning citizens, services for seniors, and help for women and children escaping crisis. We walk with people from their hardest moment towards stability, independence, and hope, and that's what makes us a totally unique organization.
We're spending some time with Dr. Chad Oudy, President, CEO of Detroit Rescue Mission Ministries. It is WJR Cares Day, an especially important day because your every dollar is matched with $3 today and today only. As we remind you, DRMM fulfills its mission statement by providing hope to the hopeless, disadvantaged, and homeless men and women and children of our community by ministering to the total person, the body, the soul, the spirit, with services and programs designed to address spiritual, physical, emotional, and social needs To those seeking assistance in hopes of them becoming faithful Christians and disciples into a local church, rehabilitated, employed, and living productive and restored lives, that's all they're looking for. That's a lot. But it's important that you understand that that's what they're looking for, a hand up, not a handout.
Absolutely. And then today is a special day, so if they go into our website at drmm.org, or they call our number at 313-993-4700, every dollar they donate today, it will be matched with $3.
That is truly incredible and important to note. Again, you can get more information. You can donate online at drmm.org, drmm.org, or you can call 313-993-4700, 313-993-4700. Do you reveal who's helping with the $3 per dollar match, or do you keep that secret?
Not at this time. We can't yet, because people sometimes don't want to be known, as you know. But it is 100% match. $1, every dollar we raise today will be matched for $3, 100%.
And they all go
to directly helping the people without any doubt.
So, I mean, my listeners are like me. They like getting a deal.
Yes.
So this is my kind of deal. When a dollar is worth $3, only a humanitarian deal that doesn't get any better than this. Dr. Chad Oudy, President and CEO of the Detroit Rescue Mission Ministries. Today's the day. Go to drmm.org, drmm.org, or call 313-993-4700, 313-993-4700. Every dollar that you donate today and today only will be matched with $3. Keep up the good work, Dr. Oudy. God bless you, sir.
Thank you, Paul, for all what you do. Thank you very much.
Anything that I can do to help along the way, you know I will. We continue. Well, it is Linus and Lucy, Vince Guaraldi, and that famous theme that I hope puts a smile on your face, a little hop in your step for this holiday season. We love it, and we love you, and we love being together here for the show, and we have the team in place to provide best we can relentless positive radio, not always easy with news the way it's been. But Mike Parsons, our executive producer, Danielle Mason runs the controls, although she is helping Dominic Valentini become expert at that. And Rich Luzinski keeping an eye on our WJR traffic and weather first. You can stream us at WJR.com from anywhere in the country, anywhere in the world. And a lot of people do, and we appreciate that. And a lot of people podcast us because they can't be here noon to 2, Monday through Friday, like we are. So if you go to WJR.com, look at the bottom of the page, look for the podcast, look for me, Paul W. Smith, and we appreciate it when you do. You can listen to the show very quickly because they cut out a bunch of stuff. So the things that wouldn't make sense listening to it later or earlier the next day, whatever. I mean, you don't need the traffic and the weather because it wouldn't be right. So they cut all that out, and it's amazing how fast you can hear the whole show. While you're on your way now to making each and every day count, because you know each day is a gift, and we also remember QTR, quality time remaining, because we don't know how much QTR we have. Make the most of it. And thanks for choosing, by the way, to be an important part of the best and brightest audience in all of radio. One of my favorite guys, maybe yours too, Dick Van Dyke, has turned 100, and he credits his milestone birthday to a daily ritual he and his wife faithfully maintains. Do you know what that ritual is?
I do. Do you want me to?
Yes, I'd like to hear it.
Well, I'm not going to do what they do. They sing. I was going to say, I better not let that sentence hang out there too long.
You got to be careful with a sentence like that.
Yeah, they have a date.
I mean, he's 100, for God's sake.
Hey, good for him.
I'm just saying.
Yeah, so I wonder what kind of, like, is it just humming a little tune? Do they sing?
They dance.
Yeah.
They're being up, and the key here for all of us, they're moving.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's got to be some good cardio dancing every morning.
It's just moving. A lot of us don't move very much anymore. We just don't, and we should. And they do something that Grandpa Harry didn't. He lived to be 130, 40, I don't know how many years ago when it wasn't very popular to do. They start the day with music.
Mm.
I've said this to Kim, and I'm not good at it, but anytime I'm not on the air, we should be listening to music in the background. I don't mean a music radio station. I mean music that we pick. Well, now it's from what?
Spotify or Apple.
Whatever it is, one of these. You just say, play the Beatles music or
Siri,
play
yeah.
Christmas music. Siri, I guess, yeah. So I'm telling you, Grandpa Harry always had music playing. And now I'm finding out that this other guy living to be 100, Dick Van Dyke, likes to have the music going all the time. How about that?
Yeah, he still goes to the gym 3 times a week.
Yeah.
And the other thing is, People magazine did not jinx him. Remember when all those Betty White 100-year anniversary issues came out and she didn't make it?
Yep.
Yep. So, yeah, he wasn't jinxed, and he moves and he listens to music. That sounds like the key, because I guess he did smoke and drink when he was younger, but he quit, I think,
a long time ago.
Yeah, around the time he was 50. So that also probably helped.
50 years ago.
Yeah.
Isn't that something? Well, he's just always been a great guy, very talented, just a joy, always fun, always a smile on his face. All those things really matter. They really do. Now, today is, why isn't it coming up here? There we go. National Chocolate Covered Anything Day. So use your imagination to a point.
Yeah.
But barbecue, potato chips, strawberries, even chocolate-covered ants, not for me, but this is the day that everyone should be celebrating, National Chocolate-Covered Anything Day. Now, do you have a favorite Christmas movie? And I'll ask the whole team. I'll ask Danielle. I'll ask Dominic Rich, if he's around. Do you have a favorite Christmas movie?
I don't have one favorite, but I do have ones that I have to watch every year, right? Like, you got The Christmas Story, you got Elf, you got Christmas Vacation, but I don't know which one I like more than the other. I love them all.
We love Elf, without question, throughout our household. Everyone loves Elf. Puts us in a good, happy spirit. I really like, and I don't see it on as many lists anymore, It's a Wonderful Life. You didn't include that, so you may think it's too old now. I don't know.
Well, I do like watching It's a Wonderful Life. It's always on Christmas Eve on Channel 4. And I love getting home from wherever I am and watching the rest of the movie. I never watch it all the way through. It's about the time Uncle Billy loses the money because he's an idiot. But
that's when you leave it, or that's when you join
it? No, that's
it?
When I come in.
Oh, okay. That's funny. So here we have from somebody the 25 best Christmas movies of all time. So I had to look at that. Number 25, The Family Stone. I don't, Diane Keaton was in it. I don't remember it. Number 24, The Holiday. Cameron Diaz. I love her, but don't know.
Never heard.
Number 23, our own Tim Allen, The Santa Claus.
Should be higher. Should be way higher. Maybe
the Santa Claus
one.
Should be?
Yep.
Oh, okay. And then there's number 22, Claus. Not familiar.
Never
it's
heard
a cartoon,
of it.
Good I think. One. 21, Christmas in Connecticut from 1945. 20, Gremlins, 1984. Why did you do 25?
Rich loves Gremlins.
All right, well, there you are. The Holdovers from 2023 is number 19. 18, where's...
I don't know.
Chevy Chase in that? No. No, he's National Lampoon Christmas Vacation, but they didn't give him a number on this. All right, 17, Scrooged.
Yep, Rich and I love Scrooged.
16, the one that's always surprising to people as a Christmas movie. Which one am I talking about? Always a surprise.
Is it Die Hard?
Die Hard, yeah. Absolutely right.
Love that movie.
Bruce Willis. And first time I heard it was a Christmas movie, I went, really? Aren't they kind of reaching? 1947, Miracle on 34th Street. By the way, and I don't want to cry telling you this, one of the favorite pieces of video I've ever seen on this godforsaken social media, and this was Instagram. I have Instagram, Paul W. Sminsta. Mm-hmm. Paul W. Sminsta, that's my Instagram. That's as far as I go. There is a woman from a long time ago, it's got to be in a movie, and she's delivering a little girl to Santa Claus's lap, and she says, you don't have to talk to her, she's deaf, but she really wanted to see you. So she places her on Santa's knee, this cute little girl, and she's looking at Santa. And Santa's looking at her, and all of a sudden, he starts doing sign language with her that nobody knew he knew.
Right.
And he did it. Have you seen this video at all?
No. Is it from a movie, or is it something that really happened?
It's got to be from a movie.
Yeah.
No, it didn't really happen. It has to be from a movie, but I don't know what movie. It is so touching. It's one of my favorite. I sent it to my sister, Alice, and I said, this is one of my favorite things I've ever seen online. Kim already knows this. So, all right.
You promised yourself you wouldn't cry.
I'm not. White Christmas, number 14, from 1954. The Nightmare Before Christmas, number 13. Trading Places was a Christmas movie, number 12.
No, I've never thought of it that way.
All right. Now, Fred Mester, Judge Mester says It's a Wonderful Life. Of course, it must be our generation. But anyway, Home Alone.
Okay.
You both like that? All three of you? Everybody? The four of you?
Yeah.
However many of you are there?
Is
one
it one or two?
Number 11.
Oh, wow. That must be
number
a good
Number 10,
one.
Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer from 1964. Number 9, The Year Without a Santa Claus, 1974. Don't remember that at all. Come on. The Muppets are in that. Number 7 is Bad Santa.
Okay.
Billy Bob Thornton. Now, how do I think that I believe you probably know that one?
I actually don't know that one very well.
Well, you're going to look for it now with Billy Bob Thornton.
That one's an okay one to watch. It's
he
a little
spikes
bit
the
silly.
Eggnog.
Yeah.
It's got to be silly. I love this one, number 6. But I came on the air once and told everyone to watch it because I had just watched it on an airplane going somewhere.
All right.
And didn't realize that on the airplane, they cut out nudity, which I didn't know existed. So I tell everyone, oh, it's a great family film. You got to watch this. Then I watched it at home and I went, oh, my God, where did the nudity come from? Love Actually. That's a fabulous but adult film.
I bet you
film.
I bet you whenever you tell that story, streams of Love Actually probably spike.
I don't know. It's a very, well, maybe for all the wrong reasons,
right.
But it's a very good film. Number 5, How the Grinch Stole Christmas, 1966.
Classic.
Oh, here's one that we do love. I can't believe it's number 4, Elf.
We did mention Elf.
Already?
Yeah.
Well, that is
no. Paul said that was his family's favorite one.
Yeah,
he wants it to be higher.
Oh,
yeah, I think
see.
It should be. Thank you for paying attention.
You're
somebody's got to keep track of this
welcome.
Stuff. We appreciate you, Danielle, more than you know. Number 3, I forgot about this. This is where my music comes from. A Charlie Brown Christmas from 1965.
Right, and that's why Peanuts counts as, or why Linus and Lucy counts as a Christmas music because of the special.
And it really is. Number 2. A Christmas Story from 1983.
Sure, you'll shoot your eye out.
That's with the BB gun.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and look, this is a nod toward me and the judge. The number one film from 1946, according to these people, It's a Wonderful Life.
There you go.
Which is really, in spite of what Mike Parson said, it's worth watching from start to stop.
I'm not saying it's not worth it. I just never catch it.
I know, but you always come in when Uncle Billy blows it.
Right.
It's worth watching. And you find out about things that are important in life when you find out you really are the richest man in town and it has nothing to do with money. It's a Wonderful Life. Okay, what's your favorite? Danielle?
The Santa Claus.
Rich, are you still around? You're okay. Michael?
It's a tie amongst many. I mentioned Elf, Christmas Story, Christmas Vacation, a lot of them.
And Dominic?
I got a dark horse here. I love Four Christmases with Vince Vaughn and Reese Witherspoon.
That's a good one. That's a good one.
That one didn't make the list. That might be worth looking for. Is it uplifting or not?
It can be uplifting. It's about just the difficulties of family that both Vince Vaughn and Reese Witherspoon come from divorced families, and so they have to attend four Christmases, and they have heated relationships with each of their parents. But it's just about, like, what family means to you, even if they drive us crazy during the holidays.
Sounds very meaningful, Dominic.
I don't think so.
Reese Witherspoon is all you need. You just need Reese. She's in there. She's a babe. It's fine.
I think we're going to move on now. It is almost 1:18 as we celebrate the holidays here with you, and happy Hanukkah, and soon Christmas, and then Kwanzaa, and anything else you want to celebrate, we're all in here with Paul W. Smith and the team, the team, the team in focus on WJR. Well, we know that the best gift we can give or receive is the gift of health. The gift of health. If you want to enjoy the holidays without taking pills or getting injections for chronic back, neck, or knee pain, you can. Thanks to our friend, Dr. Saul Kogan. And Dr. Saul Kogan's non-surgical, non-invasive, all-natural intra-disc neutrosis treatments at the Nerve and Disc Institute. You won't get those anywhere but at Dr. Saul Kogan's The Nerve and Disc Institute. And what a team he has. Well, take Rick, for example. Rick couldn't even walk. He was scheduled for back surgery. Obviously, he was, rightfully so, scared to death. But after treatment with Dr. Kogan, he walks 5 miles in no pain, which, quote, he says, feels like a miracle, end of quote. Well, the Nerve and Disc Institute has helped thousands of people, like Kim and me, and maybe you, with sciatica, spinal stenosis, neuropathy, and bulging degenerative and herniated discs. Avoid spine surgery. And by the way, they're now successfully helping people avoid knee replacements with Knee Restore RX. That's new. Knee Restore RX. Give it a try. Plus, the first 10 new patients who call right now and start either treatment in December in Farmington, Clinton Township, or Grand Blanc will get 60% off their treatment plan. 60% off. Call the Nerve and Disc Institute, Dr. Saul Kogan, 586-416-DISC, 586-416-DISC, or 586-416-3472, 586-416-3472, the Nerve and Disc Institute, and Dr. Saul Kogan. What a great holiday season this could be for you. 120 WJR. Well, we love these holidays and the music and all of that. Unfortunately, we are forced back into the reality of the times only because we can't just ignore this. We just cannot. With all the trouble, look what happened in Australia. Look what happened at Brown University. I mean, it's all around us, sadly. We did get good news, which we reported on the last couple of days, that the FBI was able to break up what was apparently a terrorist plot planned for New Year's Eve. In fact, I'm seeing it on my monitor right now. Far-left extremist accused of plot to kill ICE, among other things. The former special agent in charge of the Detroit FBI is Daniel Roberts. Agent Roberts, it is a pleasure and a privilege to welcome you to the Paul W. Smith Focus Show, sir. Thank you.
It's good to be back with you, Paul.
We always love speaking with you. We always appreciate what you have gone through and all the men and women that you represent still that have done a great job. And what a great job this was. We have to understand that our law enforcement people have to be right every time. These people only need to get through once to wreak havoc. And we don't know if we got them all. We just hope that we do. But we say now that the federal authorities have foiled a plot to bomb multiple sites of two U.S. companies on New Year's Eve. Can you tell us what you and the FBI have found?
Well, I know 4 people have been arrested in connection with that plot, and you're right about that. The FBI and its partners in the Joint Terrorism Task Force did a phenomenal job to stop that. Much like the FBI and the Detroit Division did back in Halloween, if you remember, there was a case in the Dearborn and Detroit area where 8 arrests were made, and they foiled a terrorist attack at that time as well. So, Yeah, they just, the FBI just can't take its eye off the ball, especially around the holidays, which are always a heightened state of alert.
You know, things have changed over the years, and not for the better. I saw either an equal amount of women or even more women than men in these arrests for this, what's called the Turtle Island Liberation Front.
Right. I, you know, truthfully, until this story broke yesterday and those individuals were arrested, I had never even heard of that group before, but apparently they're
Nor had
American. Yeah, there must be new since I retired from the FBI. Obviously, pro-Palestinian, anti-American group, who apparently was very active on social media and posted some of their, violence against America on social media, which is likely where the FBI picked up on it, although it could have come from confidential human sources, which are clearly also involved in that case as well.
What they say, I guess, quote, the working class should rise up and fight against capitalism. I that's a little confusing because the working class, which is virtually anybody who's working, as far as I'm concerned, or has a job, are participating in capitalism.
Yeah, it's disheartening. You know, they also made death to America and death to ICE agents quotes in their social media postings and rantings and things. So I knew that, that I don't know what they were thinking, because that's clearly going to attract attention by posting that in a public forum like they did. Usually these extremist groups are a little bit more secure in their communications than that. But in this case, it sounds like they posted it publicly on Instagram.
Idiots. So former special agent in charge of the Detroit FBI, Daniel Roberts, I'm going to ask you, now that you have stepped back and have a bigger view, what do you think has been happening in our country, and for that matter, in the world, with so many angry people? What do you think has caused all of this? Any guesses?
You know, well, it's very difficult to know. How an individual becomes radicalized is very concerning. It always has been, even when I worked for the FBI before I retired from them, trying to figure out how an individual became radicalized. We have some, general concepts of that. You know, a lot of it happens online. They're sought out. They're typically males, young males, 16 to 28, say, somewhere in that range. But you're right, they could be female in this day and age. So it's very difficult to figure out. What we do know, though, is that many of these terrorist organizations do have a very forward-leaning media outreach and strategy to target our young people, to try and radicalize them. And it could be just that, that's exactly what somebody who's, not a good social person is looking for in the internet, and may glom onto that as their way forward, which is unfortunate.
Appreciate your observations, sir. Thank you for your service. As always, we appreciate you.
Well, it's good to be with you.
Former special agent in charge of the Detroit FBI. He has retired. He's been with us before. Daniel Roberts here in Focus with Paul W. JR. Well, a high-stakes legal battle is unfolding between the president, Donald Trump, and the BBC. The president filing a lawsuit against the media powerhouse, the BBC. Now, WJR's Marie Osborne, Director of Community Affairs and News, is going to talk about that lawsuit and its implications. Good afternoon, Marie.
Hi there, Paul. So this happened on Monday. President Trump filed a lawsuit in Florida seeking $10 billion in damages, accusing the British broadcaster of misrepresenting his words and engaging in unfair trade practices. This case all centers on a BBC documentary. It aired just before the 2024 election. The program stitched together portions of President Trump's January 6th speech, creating what some critics say was a misleading portrayal of his remarks. Now, while the BBC later apologized for what its chairman called, quote, an error of judgment, the network rejected claims of defamation. The controversy led to the resignations of its top executive and head of news. The president argued the edit distorted his call for peaceful protest, turning it into something far more incendiary. Legal experts note challenges ahead since the documentary was not broadcast in the U.S., though it was accessible through some streaming platforms. Paul, the BBC has yet to comment on this lawsuit, and it seeks equal damages for defamation and trade violations.
Well, I can only speak to the first part because I saw it, and it happened in America as well. A lot of people gave misleading information by editing out where the president said, I know you're going to peacefully walk over there and let them know how you feel, or however he said it. It wasn't incendiary enough, so they cut it out, and they only had it about him saying, you're going to have to fight if you want this. You're going to have to fight for that. So the BBC did exactly what many American outlets did. They're absolutely guilty. I saw it when all these guys that were involved, I love the error of judgment. See, they're not even denying that somebody made a very wrong decision to do this. They admit it by saying an error of judgment. But I remember reading not too long ago when all of those people who were involved, you mentioned them, they quit. They retired early, or they left because they knew they were guilty. They did something that was very wrong.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Editing can be a very touchy thing. I mean, we do it every day. I do it every day at WJR. We, you know, have access to the, you know, the politicians and what they are saying. And I was told a long time ago to just, I was just told a long time ago, be very careful how you edit. You should never even edit out pauses in when people speak, because, you know, they're intended, that sends a message too. So you've just got to be very careful with your editing.
I want to give you a quick example before I forget about it. A long time ago, our dear friend, who I still stay in touch with, not as much as I'd like to, but Ron Gettelfinger, the head of the UAW, you recall during the very difficult negotiations that were underway, he wouldn't be interviewed by any newspaper anywhere because they would edit what he said. But he would come on our show because we'd have him on live, and I'd say, you just say what you want to say. We're not editing anything here. This is live. You say what you want to say. And he used us to get his message out. And that's why, because you can change the meaning of anything by the way you edit it.
Right. But I also want to say there's a lot of newsmakers who don't want to do live interviews. They don't want to do them because they're afraid they might say the wrong thing. So I agree with Ron Gettelfinger. You have the opportunity to breathe through your answers and really think them through and let people really understand what you're trying to say.
Right. We offered that to him and he grabbed it. And I'll never forget that. He was very good to us. That's for sure. And he was very important in saving the auto industry at a time when we really needed him. Thank you, Marie.
Thank you.
1:43 at WJR. Well, this news is not great. We're just seeing a former Israeli ambassador to the U.S. saying that Israeli intel says it warned Australia of threats. Our friend Doron Levin, freelance journalist extraordinaire, born in Israel, served in the Israeli army, as did his wife Adina as an officer in the military. Doron goes back to Israel, to his homeland, often, and he is currently in Israel. Always a pleasure to catch up with you, Doron. I hope you're well and you had good travel.
Thanks, Paul. Always good to hear your voice, and wishing happy holiday and happy Hanukkah to all of your colleagues there and to your listening audience, and letting you know that we just finished lighting the Hanukkah candles here in Tel Aviv and are so happy to be with you.
Well, happy Hanukkah to you and Adina again and again. I don't know if you heard what I just said. We're hearing that Israeli sources had warned Australia about some impending problems. I had not heard that until just now.
We know that the Labor government in Australia has been delinquent in terms of calling out anti-Jewish hatred. They've done things to incite anti-Zionist, anti-Semitic, Jew-hating elements in Australian society when they recognize the Palestinian state that doesn't exist and for no particular purpose other than maybe to virtue signal or to try to placate the Muslim population in Australia. It's impossible to get into the mind of the shooters at Bondi Beach, but we know that these types of incitements do cause trouble. They tend to empower and encourage people on the fringe. And so I'm sure that the Israeli intelligence did warn them of this, and I'm sure that it probably was heard and probably not acted upon. Not that they could have necessarily stopped that shooting, but I think governments everywhere have to realize that the rising tide of anti-Semitism worldwide is going to not just hurt the Jewish people, it's going to hurt everybody.
And we have to be very concerned right here in this country as well, always. Doron Levin, there in Israel right now, what's the mood after an attack like this in Australia? How are the people that you are surrounded by, how are they taking this?
Well, this is a country for 75 years that has really fought for its survival and has had to oppose the forces that are trying to destroy the Jewish state and destroy Israeli sovereignty. And we have just been so overjoyed to receive back our hostages from Gaza and to some and all but I believe one of the bodies of people who were murdered in Gaza. So there's that sense of relief and joy. And going into the Hanukkah season, obviously no one was expecting to have to bear this latest blow, which were the people who were killed on Bondi Beach in Sydney. But that's on everybody's mind, and it's on the mind of Israeli security officials who have warned that Israelis are going to be subject to hostage taking in the future, because we have, as a part of the deal that we've made, we've allowed so many of these terrorists with blood on their hands, we've allowed them to leave our jails in order to get our own hostages back, which some of the defense officials here believe are only going to empower future hostage takers.
You mentioned getting the hostages back, getting bodies back, and all of that. How is everyone looking at the situation there now? There's been so much concern, and then we've heard that there was a ceasefire, and then there was more shooting and bombing. How is it going right now?
Well, it's very tough. It's very tough on Israel, but it's also very tough on the Palestinian people who have been basically either taken hostage themselves by the Hamas or been cooperating, unfortunately, with the Hamas. And you have a situation in Gaza where it's going to be impossible to rebuild that area from its complete devastation until the Hamas is disarmed, and they've refused to be disarmed. So there's really only one way to do it, and that's by force. And so there have been scattered outbreaks of violence in the Gaza Strip, and I think there will probably be more until it's clear that the Hamas is not going to be allowed to rule the Gaza Strip and that they're not going to be allowed to carry weapons. The people who are carrying weapons are going to have to give up their arms. And that's pretty much a showstopper in terms of anything happening with regard to reconstruction and rebuilding of the Gaza Strip.
And we don't see Hamas ever giving up their guns. It's kind of a hollow idea that there's been any kind of a real move toward peace, or so it would assume. But now you have an excellent opportunity, Bay. Going back and forth, Doron Levin with this fabulous freelance journalist, born in Israel, served in the Israeli military like his lovely wife, Adina, as an officer. You've gone back and forth. Are you getting any more hopeful for any kind of resolution to this ongoing Gaza situation?
Well, I'm an optimistic person by nature, so I'm always an optimist, and I remain optimistic. I plan to try to get down to Gaza if I can and see on the ground for myself what's happening, and I'm following the local press, which is doing a pretty good job of reporting. I've been seeing television reports since I got here, and I've been reading the local journalistic reports, much of which does not reach the mass media and is not really treated with that much attention outside of Israel, but is very believable and is very verifiable. And so I think that Israel now has to rebuild its military and its security apparatus and figure out really what did happen on October 7th to make sure that it doesn't happen again. And this is really a continuing task for the IDF and for the Jewish people and for Israel.
We greatly appreciate you always checking in with us when you get over there. And yeah. We thank you and wish you and Adina and the whole family a very happy and safe Hanukkah.
Thank you. And Merry Christmas to all of you and to all your listeners. And thank you very much for the opportunity to be here, Paul.
Doron Levin, live from Israel. That's going to do it for us. Stand by for news and the best programming ever in JR Afternoon with Ryan Ermani. Regards, Paul W. Smith.